Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Homeowners get property insurance as a matter of course, because the mortgage lender requires it, right? But not all landlords require tenant insurance. I think it is for sure a worthwhile expense. It doesn't cost very much, protect you in case something bad happens. But what if you receive a quote that you think is too high? To talk about why this might be the case and what your options might be, we're joined by Grant Clark. He is Vice President of National Personal Insurance with BrokerLink, and he joins us now from Edmonton, Alberta. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
Why does someone need tenant insurance in the first place? Make your case here.
Yeah, absolutely. As a tenant, you might find yourself liable for damage you caused to the building or the property, or unintentional harm caused to others who live or visit that property that you're occupying. You know, generally, what drives someone towards realizing their need and the value of the tenant insurance product is their first tenant insurance policy. It's the landlord. Often, you know, a landlord will include it as a condition of their lease or rental agreement, or that concept of tenant insurance will come up while in conversation with an insurance professional. They'll make the recommendation and the customer will consider the protection.
What are some ways in which it would differ from homeowner's insurance? Does a general tenant policy cover the same or similar things?
No, they're quite a different product. With the tenant insurance, you're not covering the physical structure as you would with a homeowner's product. With the tenant insurance, you know, coverage and policy enhancements do vary provider to provider, but the basics you'd want to see in that tenant's policy are pretty similar no matter where you look. You're getting coverage for contents or personal belongings, coverage for additional living expenses, and then the personal liability coverage. So that homeowner's component of that physical structure is definitely absent from the tenant's pack.
I mentioned that it isn't that expensive to get this kind of coverage. At least that's been in my experience. Give us a range here. Say a 30-year-old single person with an average amount of stuff, an average amount of technology, a nice black leather couch or whatever. What are they paying a month?
That individual, in my experience, would be a very average tenant insurance customer, and you'd be looking at about $25 to $45 a month, Bruce.
Yeah. So it's not a lot. Like that's a couple of drinks at a fancy place. And this coming from someone who's quite skeptical about insurance in general. And I always want to make sure people buy the coverage that they for sure need versus, you know, that is simply a bonus or a perk. So this, I think it is easy to justify why people need to have tenant insurance. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about is, when people have a hard time finding coverage, and we use the term unconventional, when they live somewhere unconventional, what are some examples of where people could live where coverage might be harder to get?
Yeah, so one of the rating factors that goes into tenant insurance would certainly be the building that you occupy, regardless if you own it or not, obviously, because it is a tenant product. The building's year of construction, the updates that have been done. So is the heating and the roof and the plumbing and the electrical current? How far is it from a fire hydrant or a fire station? Obviously, you know, an older building that has older services and older electrical, the propensity for there to be a loss is much higher than a newer location. So that would drive that acceptability.
What are some scenarios in which you could be out and out rejected? So not just having to pay more, but where an insurance company would be unwilling to write that policy.
Yeah, say you're an existing tenant insurance customer and perhaps you've had many losses or claims against your tenant insurance policy. That could create challenges in getting that policy issued.
What are some red flags for insurers on the risk of fraud? We talk a lot about insurance fraud, or at least we do on this show. What are some areas in which that would be a concern for an insurance company?
In the context of tenant insurance?
Oh my gosh, you're pausing. Is that to say that it is so rare that you don't even have an answer for me?
No, you know, I didn't come prepared to talk about fraud relative to tenant insurance. And I know you do like your statistics and information, Bruce.
I love that my reputation precedes me. I'm not important for me to have stats. It'd be more like, what are some of the ways in which a holder of tenant insurance might try and skirt the rules or cheat the insurance companies?
Yeah, I mean, we approach everything from utmost good faith in the insurance industry, right? So we have that utmost good faith that the consumer who purchases the product is going to do the right thing and use it for its intended purpose, but that isn't always reality. The scope of the tenant insurance product is generally limited to first party coverage for the most part, which is the things they own and possess. So to me, I would say fraud would occur if there was a claim for personal belongings or items that were lost or stolen or what have you, and perhaps that didn't actually happen.
Right. My Ming vase was broken and you therefore owe me $850,000.
There you go.
Yeah. If someone is not happy with the quote that they receive, I mean, I am a big advocate for people comparing quotes in all categories of their financial life. What do you do?
So the market offers choice, right? You've got brokers, you've got direct writers, you've got many people who will offer the protection. Of course, in my opinion, the best is an insurance broker. They've got a swath of companies that they can compare the rate for you with and give you the advice that goes with it. Things that drive it, Bruce, the premium up or down would be, you know, the value of their belongings. Do they want a 1 million, 2 million or greater liability limit? The building that we talked about before, how old is it? Is it new? Is it updated? Is it older? Credit history also can play a part in pricing property policies as well. So is the credit history favorable? As well as the claims, the claims history, right? Is it claims free? Do they have a few on their record that we need to consider?
We talk a lot on this program about how people are paid because it is so helpful for investors to know how advisors are paid, for borrowers to know how mortgage brokers are paid. In the context of tenant insurance, how are insurance brokers paid? Because it's a fairly small dollar ring. Is it even a profitable product for you to sell?
That's right. And I mean, the profitability is driven market by market and market by market would be insurance company and how they price their products. That's unique to the carrier. But from the standpoint of an insurance broker, there's a modest commission earned on the premium for the tenant's insurance policy. It's low. And it's a volume play, right? You want to insure quite a few tenants to earn a good return on that.
What's the percentage?
I think it
like 5%, 10%.
Yeah, it's in that 10% range.
10%, right? So say it's like $250 a year. The broker's making $25. That's not a big chunk of money. Versus if they've got your entire suite of other insurance needs, your property, your auto, whatever, that could be a couple of grand, and commission would be higher on that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff, Grant. I really appreciate you joining us to talk about it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.